accession number 3-1-4-3-2, Mr. Tug Wilson, real 5. Now, why would we're talking about the Malayan student riots? Why would they've not deliberately given you a duff rifle? If you see what I mean.
Well, I don't suppose they want us to aggravate the situation by shooting somebody. We were inexperienced in that sort of thing anyway. I think there was one or two RAF men did get killed, but I don't know any details about that.
But they didn't come anywhere near you in the camp. It was only when you were escorting the Malayans home.
They were prepared at the camp for it. We had somebody in pairs patrolling the boundaries to make sure nobody came in. But it was highly fenced anyway. So I don't know what the riots were about. I don't know.
Anything else happened while you were out there?
No, not really. I put down Kranji as a holiday, a working holiday. Because everywhere you went, it was exotic.
Well, tell us a bit more about your fun there.
We had tennis courts and badminton courts. We had a swimming pool. You could play tennis until you was wringing wet with sweat and just fall straight into the pool, you know, and things like that. But the place was held by the Japanese during the war, and that was quite a lot of Australians were slaughtered there. But opposite where one of the mess decks I was in was a place called Rose Cottage, where the Japanese officers lived, and where they rounded up all the locals, took the daughters, and they put in there, and that was the brothel. But whether there was any British troops at Kranji when they took over, I don't know. But I know there was a lot of Australians killed.
Now, anything else? Any stories? Just things that happened?
Not really. Runs ashore were very nice. I mean, the place was full of restaurants and a reasonable price. I mean, we did used to eat at the Raffles, but not at the front. We used to go around the back. There was a little restaurant. All the big stars were at the front, and we were around the back. We'd go in there and have a mixed grill and all that sort of thing. Quite reasonably cheap, and even other restaurants run by Chinese and that were very nice. And all the time I was in Singapore, I never ate curry.
Why not?
I don't know. I'd never had curry and I didn't fancy it. But when I came home, I did try it and I liked it, so I missed out. But I mean,
did you want to stay out there?
Well, it had been nice. I wasn't married then. We could have got married, and she could have come out there for 2 years, but she didn't want to. So that was the end of that.
So you didn't get married then?
No, we didn't. Not till later.
How did it just came to an end? You were there a year and a half till August 57.
Yes, and when we was sent home, we went into. Just trying to think. Can't think of the name. It's gone. The big camp there.
Doesn't matter.
No. We went into the camp there for wait for the aircraft to come and pick us up, which was quite good. It was run by the army.
Changi.
Changi, that was it?
Changi. The army camp, yeah.
Yeah, Changi. Which was quite good. We lived in a banana leaf hut, which was quite comfortable. But there was a sergeant in charge of us, and he didn't know how we should dress or what we should dress in, so it didn't matter, and he just didn't leave, he just left us alone. And we just filled a day in playing cards and going to the canteen and having food. And in the bar and have a drink, but we weren't allowed out. When we flew home,
that'll be about August 57 you come back.
Yeah, we flew home by Comet, which the RAF had just taken over. But I didn't know, did I mention that when I was on the Eagle, we picked up the bodies and wreckage from the Rome crash?
No, you didn't.
From the Rome crash. But I can't tell you much about that. We weren't allowed on the upper deck while there was picking, bringing bodies in and anything like that. But that's what we did. That was from the Rome crash.
That worry you when you were on the Comet then?
Well, when I found out it was the Comet, it did make me think. But I don't know whether you noticed, but the RAF never had any problems with it. It was only when BOAC had it. But when we flew home, it was run exactly the same as a civilian airline by the RAF. It was very good. And we landed at Lynham. And then we just went through customs. Funny thing, customs, you ain't got anything to bring. And then catch a train, I'm on leave for a fortnight, 3 weeks.
Now then you seem to go to, well, there's a brief, very brief period at Mercury. Then you seem to go to HMS Drake and then Mercury.
Yeah. Mercury is the radio training school, similar to Ganges, but it's where it was at Petersfield, Hampshire.
And what was it called? I mean, just
HMS Mercury.
HMS Mercury.
Yeah.
And what were you doing there?
Well, it's more like a transit camp, really.
Did you do the course?
No. We did. I did a course when we was at Cranji, a leading radio operators course. But that was just a course, and then when we passed that, I picked up my acting leading telegraphist badge at Whitehall on August the 15th, 1957. And that refers to when I was at Cranji, around Cranji area.
Right. So
then we was in. Then we came back. Went from Terra. We went when I'd been on leave. We went to Drake and then on a holiday, on leave. But you see, a lot of these dates,
they're confusing, aren't
they? Because they follow on, but you're on leave, and you'd still be at that place when you was on leave. Yeah. The Mercury was a little bit vague, but we did exactly the same things there as you did at any other shore base. It was, you were allocated jobs on days, and that was it.
So nothing much to remember.
Nothing spectacular. And then I went to Admiralty, President.
Now we're interested now because it seems to happen to quite a few telegraphists. That's HMS President. It's the Whitehall Wireless Station. HMS President.
Yeah.
Tell us about that.
We lived in civilian digs.
Well, tell me about them first. Where were yours?
The first one was in Islington. And how I got that, I got drafted to President, and I came home on leave, and funnily enough, Bob Wilson's wife was my wife's friend, the bridesmaids, the teachers. And we, my wife...
This is Robert Wilson, Bob Wilson, who we interviewed. And
yeah. I don't know, when, yeah. I went, my wife and I, oh, I can't remember whether she were a girlfriend then, I'm not sure. It was about the time we got married. We went to see Bob Wilson's wife at her home, the mum. And while we were there, her auntie and uncle appeared, and they lived in London. And I had mentioned that I'm looking for digs in London, and she said, come and live with us. So that was settled. Got my digs, no messing about. And I lived with them for, ooh, the first time, a few months anyway.
What was it like there?
What do you mean? At the
any digs?
Well, I admit...
Comfortable?
Yeah, it was like home from home, really. I knew the people. It's not as though you had a landlady, you know, you didn't see. And I lived as one of the family. I sat at the table with them. I sat watching television with them. I mean, even the chap used to take me to different parts of London because he'd lived there all his life.
Now, tell me about the work. What was the setup at the Whitehall Wireless Station?
I can't remember what hours we used to keep, but you'd go...
Where was the building? I mean,
in Admiralty itself. Where the entrance was next door to the stage, well, virtually next door to the stage door of the Whitehall Theatre. Under Admiralty Arch, round the back. You know, I suppose you are familiar with the Allscottish Parade and that?
Fairly.
That big building on the end of Allscottish Parade, like a turret with all green growing over it. On that side along there was the entrance to Whitehall Wireless. It was all underground, not far from Churchill's war rooms and all that.
What was it like underground? Can you describe it underground, the actual station?
Well, it was light. It was just artificial lighting. It was... That was it. It was... you didn't really notice. I mean, it was just artificial lighting. It was daylight all the time. And it was just banks of teleprinters. We had Wrens working there. All sorts of people. All sorts of people, and I was in contact with every part of the world.
And what were your duties?
Operator, teleprinter operator. The thing was...
Tell us what you do as a teleprinter operator.
Well, look, most of the teleprinters, teleprinter traffic is typed out on a typewriter by a Wren, because they've got it typing, and it punches out a tape, which would be rolled... put on a reel and given, say, to me, or if I was on a teleprinter, I'd just put it in the machine, and away it'd go. And it'd come out at the other, perhaps in Singapore or Australia. But we didn't have to deal with transmitters or receivers, because they was all done all around the country. We went at Admiralty.
Was there anything else you had to do? That sounds fairly easy. Anything else you had to do?
No, funnily enough. You had I can't remember, I think you did 8-hour shift type of thing. Night shift, it'd be a night shift. You'd go off at, say, 6 in the morning or 7 in the morning. But you go 8 o'clock at night, 9 o'clock, and finish at 6 type of thing. I can't remember exactly. But after that, when you went back to your digs, the time was yourself. You were in London, and that was it. You could use the Nuffield Centre, which was, you could get cheap food. You could go and you pick up theatre tickets from there, matinee tickets for all different theatres. And it was quite a good life, really. I did it once or twice, get myself a job at the Savoy Hotel, just to subsidise my money, because the money was no, you didn't get any more, much more money for being in London.
What did you do at the Savoy?
Well, yeah, in the kitchens, washing up and, well, chucking dishes in the washing machines and things like that. Nothing, nothing spectacular. Mopping up or sweeping.
And that was just to top your money up?
Yeah, a little bit of extra pocket money, because in London, it, you know, I suppose it's the same today. It's a little bit more expensive than here. But it was, it wasn't bad.
Now, you were LRO, is that leading radio? Radar?
Radio operator. Yeah.
Not leading telegraphy.
No, it went to the changed telegraphist to what, radio operator.
I should have asked that before. I think you said that, I just didn't notice it. So, right. Anything else about your time in London? Because, I mean, you were there from what, October 57 to January 59, it looks like.
Well, most, if, I mean, you virtually got every other weekend off. It was, I can't remember, it's such a long time ago. But when I was off, I used to knock off, you'd come off a night shift at 6 in the morning, I used to have a quick shower and down to St Pancras and come home. With your passport, you could get cheap railway, and if...
You know, so you actually get back home and get back in time for work on Monday or wherever.
Oh yeah, no problem at all. No problem at all. Because Islington, where I lived in Islington, was only just up the road from St Pancras.
So generally it was a good posting?
Yeah. In fact, I had two sessions of it there.
You grew go about there, that's right.
Yeah.
But it comes to an end in, well, about January 59.
Yeah.
Then next one?
Messina. That was a, just a minute, Messina.
It says Neptune, and then in brackets, Messina.
Yeah, I'm looking for the teaser. Neptune, Messina, teaser. No, it's not on there. Mind you, that was only a temporary thing. But yeah, Messina was a... a landing craft, and it was at Chatham, and we was going to go out to Christmas Island.
So it's HMS Messina landing craft.
Yeah, it was a I don't know what it was. It was a big one anyway, and we spent time in Chatham, and then we was helping, while it was in Chatham, helping the dock workers. Paint it, get it up to scratch, because it was a bit of a rust bucket when it started, red leading, then ship's grey. But in the end, we spent, a month or so, about a month, just over a month.
January to February, yeah.
Yeah, and they decided that the engines were no good, so we weren't going to go. We was in Chatham Barracks at the time, and we were going there on, it's only just outside the, into the dockyard, working all day, cleaning, you know, painting and all this business. And then they decided that the engines were no good, and they couldn't go, which was a shame, really. But I did hear, when we, it was a landing craft for Christmas Island, which, because they hadn't got a harbour or anything. We were to be used to transfer stores and equipment from shipping onto Christmas Island. But I did hear there was a bit of a tidal wave when we would have been there that went more or less straight over Christmas Island, washed most stuff away. But it could have been a fortunate that we didn't go.
So... that wasn't a long thing.
No, that one. And then I went into Mercury again for a month. It's just a transit camp. And then it was just same duties, sweeping up, messing about, cleaning windows.
So nothing special
no,
there?
No, nothing special.
And then they seemed to send you back to President. Well, back to Whitehall.
No, I went on the Tiger then.
Oh, sorry. Yeah. That's now, tell me about that then. So you were the Mercury's February to March 59. So what about the Tiger?
Well, we joined the Tiger. So it was her first commission, 1959, at John Brown's Yard in Glasgow.
Now, I don't know anything about what was she?
Cruiser. Well, last of the big gunships.
Can you describe, just because she's not a well-known ship these days, what was she like?
I should have brought a picture of it.
It's all right. How big?
Oh, fair size.
Big as a Belfast?
Yeah, virtually the same size. Because there were three. There was the Blake, Tiger, and the Lion. There's three cruisers. Because there is a book called the Blake, the Tiger, and the Lion. Being a new ship, we ended up being a flagship. We came down from John Brown's Yard down to Portsmouth. And then we went on exercise sea trials and all that sort of thing.
What was she like below? What was your accommodation as a? You were a leading radio.
Yeah, our accommodation then weren't hammocks, it was bunks.
Now, what do you think of that?
They was okay, mind you. They dropped down into your seating, if you know what I mean. The middle one dropped down on the seat and the other one turned over and come down, so it was kind of a bench. They were ideal, but it could be a bit inconvenient at times when somebody wanted to stay in the bunk or get in the bunk and you got no back to, you know. And that was same.
What about the mess deck? Was it a good mess deck?
Oh yeah.
You're a leading tour, was it?
There was no. Everybody was mixed in, leading radio operators, ordinary radio operators.
Oh, so you just all together on a crew
basis? Oh yeah, it's a big mess. Two sides. On one side was the tactical side, which was the bunting tossers and all them, and the other side was us, the radio, which we're both in conjunction with each other.
Now, it's a more modern ship. Was it more comfortable or not?
Well, I say a modern ship. She was laid down before during the war, but she wasn't commissioned until 59.
Was that her first commission?
Her first commission, yeah. She was never finished.
So, not the mess deck was no different, really?
No,
it was. What you used to. Now, what was your job? What was the wireless operator doing? Anything new in the wireless room?
No. Well, no, not really. It's the same sort of equipment, but probably a bit more modern. The teleprinters. And the job was just communications with shipping. The teleprinter was run by, depending where you were, if you was in the home waters, the teleprinter would be chattering away from Admiralty. That's where all the stuff came from.
So just the same duties as...
Same duties at sea, yeah. And when you was off, you was either given a job painting things or scrubbing decks, anything, polishing, making aerials, emergency aerials, which we never used. We did use them on exercise when we was...
Well, tell us about the exercise. You say you're on sea trials and exercise. The
sea trials was really running the ship in, see what she could do and all this business. And then, being she was a new ship, she was made flagship. And it wasn't long before we went... Well, wait a minute. We went out to the Baltic. Went through the Suez Canal... not Suez, the Kiel Canal. Into the Baltic. We went to... I think we was about the first ship to go... British ship, warship, to go into Gdynia since the war. And then we went a trip. We were Sweden, Stockholm, and it was just showing the flag. That's where you had all the visitors come on board. that sort of thing.
What was that like?
Well,
during a visitor's day.
Well, you just keep out of the way. It was a bit of a nuisance, really. Crowds of people. There weren't at certain places you couldn't go anyway. So, I don't know what they saw in it, really, of just going onto a warship, because it's not ideal for women to go onto a warship with the steep stairwells and all that.
Is there anything else about that cruise, the Baltic?
We did have it was Cold War time, then. We did have a Russian, I don't know whether, cruiser or destroyer, a big one, come alongside us and sail with us for a few hours, taking photographs, and we did the same sort of thing, put brooms up and wires across it, and with buckets on the top, and just to confuse them and all that sort of thing. And while we was out there, the communications branch, radio side, was monitoring the overseas service for the BBC to see how it was received out east, which was jammed most of the time by the Russians. But then we had these big aircraft flying over as Russians. But taking photographs, nothing aggressive, all very friendly.
Anything else?
I know the day we left Stockholm, it started to snow. Then we came back through the Kiel Canal. We stopped off in Kiel. It was nice. We'll have a look around the U-boats that were still there. Well, not to go on them, because they were still in active service. Not as such as, but they were still in service. Still had crews on everything. And that was in 1959. And then we went from there to the Mediterranean.
What were you doing there?
Same thing. Showing the flag. Flagship. Just going round. Then we go on exercise with the Italians and the Spanish. And it was only just firing your guns and things like that. Somebody towing a target, shooting at that sort of thing. And actually, it's a bit like a cruise liner, as it is. You know, you go from one place to another and you go run ashore. And
were you aware that your time was coming to an end? I mean, you know.
Oh, yes, I was married then. And
when did you get married?
1958. While I was at Whitehall, actually.
How had that affected, you know, your naval career? Were you determined to carry on, or did you?
No, well, I'd already changed 7 and 5. And when I got married, and the wife decided she wanted a house, and she'd put a name down for one and all that, and so I thought, well,
and so you were coming out.
I decided, yeah, and my son was born when I was actually on the Tiger. And that really, at the time, I thought, well, when my time's up, I think I'm going home, you know, and spend time with the family.